Hello, you're listening to Gaze Gaze, in which we're gay, and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies, and sometimes we talk about other stuff. My name's Erin, and I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about.
And my name's Erin, and you used to call me on my cell phone late night when you need my love. You remember that? Do you remember when that happened in the hit movie Tar?
That did happen in the hit movie Tar. Oh,
best movie of 2022, Tar.
Tar, it is a movie.
Wow, disagreeing right off the bat. I personally don't know. Did I see any other movies that were made in 2022? Sorry to immediately fucking derail us, but let me go to my Letterboxd. No, I saw The Batman. The Batman came out in 2022.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was the only other movie.
Robert Pattinson. So
from my perspective, I think Tar was the best movie that I saw in 2022 because it was just a little bit better than The Batman.
I don't know. The Batman was pretty good.
going off of my Letterboxd reviews, I gave The Batman 3 stars and I gave Tar 3.5 stars.
Wow.
Erin, I have a bad habit of watching movies that came out like 30 years ago. I like never keep up with stuff that's actually coming out as it comes out.
That's fair. I watched The Menu recently.
What's that?
It's a movie about rich people who go to a fancy like restaurant that's like very exclusive and like costs thousands of dollars and you get like a set menu. And then shenanigans happen.
They all get food poisoning.
Kind of.
I'm looking at this. I don't think that I would like this.
I thought it was pretty good. There were internet people who were like, this was better than Glass Onion, and I would say that they are not that dissimilar.
I was gonna say it sounds kind of like Knives Out, Glass Onion adjacent, but I'm also, to be completely honest, I'm really not interested in watching Knives Out either. Sorry, controversial opinion.
That is.
I've never seen it and I kind of don't want to see it.
Well, we could do Glass Onion for the podcast technically because Janelle Monáe's in it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So you're the fool.
you're
missing out on this great content.
It's like a murder mystery, like the Clue movie, right? I thought Clue was like fine. I just watched it recently for the first time, actually.
Yeah.
I think I gave that like a 3-star.
Oh my goodness. It's so campy. How can you not love it?
Yeah, it could be campier.
You know, that's a critique that I would also give to Tar.
Yeah, I actually really would give that critique to Tar. Yeah, Tar, widely considered to be one of, if not the best movie of 2022 by like critics, by critic associations, by film and award companies. People love this one.
I enjoyed it. And then I read some stuff about it. And then I was like, this made me enjoy it less.
Honestly, yeah. Well, because I when I watched it, I was like, this is a very interesting character study, but like, what is the messaging and the morals? And we'll get into that. There's a lot to say about that. We should probably open with content warnings.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a rough watch because the entire crux of the film is really about quote unquote cancel culture and the Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm.
Never, I guess, directly said the Me Too movement, right? But that is what it's about.
Yeah.
So definitely big content warnings for this film, and that we'll be talking about manipulative and emotionally abusive partners, sexual abuse and implied sexual abuse, suicide, and also public acts of violence, like mass violence. And yeah, just because of how much the film goes into the cancel culture Me Too discussion, for me, it's a little bit tired to watch. But also, to be fair, I've worked in the anti-sexual violence movement now for like 8 years.
Yeah.
So I've heard everything that could possibly be said about this, right?
Seriously. I hadn't seen anything about Tar, and then you told me just that was kind of one of the themes. And I will say, like, knowing that going in, it was a lot less prevalent than I thought it was going to be. Yeah. Like, it really takes a while to get going. But, you know, stay alert.
Yeah. I definitely had been told by people, like, go into this movie blind without knowing anything. And that's going to be, like, the prime way that you enjoy it. But again, for just based on my life experience, going in blind actually made me, like, oh, for real? Like, I was like, I wish I had known, because then at least I would have kind of had an idea of what was coming, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You could be on either side. If you don't want to know any more than that and you want to watch it and you haven't seen it yet, go do that and then come back to this episode. As I say with almost every single episode that we do, because we will be getting into all the spoilers. And this movie has one of the most unexpected endings that I've ever seen in a film.
Yeah.
I could not have predicted. It made me laugh, like, uproariously laugh.
Oh, yeah.
The ending.
Oh, my God.
But also, maybe some other people wouldn't find it funny. But for me, again, just based on my personal experience, I was like, this is so funny. This is the funniest way this movie could have ended.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about that, too. So again, if you don't want to get spoiled, tap out now.
Tap out for 3 hours and watch this movie.
Why is this movie, like, 8 hours long?
I don't know. Every minute is necessary, but also it probably could have been shorter.
Every minute caused me pain.
Oh, no.
No, it really didn't. Do you want to just jump right into summary, actually?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, this is going to be long-winded. It's a three-hour movie. I can't summarize it any faster, I don't think. I should preface that I went into this movie really thinking that it was based on a true story.
Well, it gives off that, like, air. Like, it's a biopic.
It really does. And I guess, to a degree, it kind of is.
No.
We'll talk about that. It's not. It's not. I don't even know how to address all of the stuff that they've done with tying in real people into this film. We'll get there. I'm not going to talk about it in the summary, but...
Yeah, the moral of the story is men shouldn't be allowed to make movies.
Actually, yeah. You know what? All right. So the fictional and titular Lydia Tarr is a famous American classical musician. She lives with her wife and their daughter in this parasite-esque mansion in Germany. And Lydia spends all of her time working on her compositions and also conducting the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. And this movie is just a character study about Lydia and her life at home and at work as a conductor and composer. So the film opens with a live interview with The New Yorker, where she talks about all of her upcoming projects, as well as a little about her philosophy when it comes to conducting. She really commands this conversation and talks at length about gender and conducting. And one of her kind of takeaway points is that she really hasn't experienced sexism in her work.
Specifically the line about sexism, I feel like that was her, like, kind of just being like, of course not, because that's what people want to hear. And that's also what her male colleagues want to hear.
Yes.
I think that was, like, an introduction to kind of her false narrative.
And I feel like, too, it's not just that she's saying what they want to hear, but it's that she has, like, gaslit herself into believing it, too.
Yeah, I do think that's a really good point and true.
Yeah. So after this interview, her assistant, Francesca, helps her exit the interview and go on to the next gig. And she is guest lecturing at Juilliard, which is America's most prominent performing arts school.
Gillian Jacobs, my personal fave, she went to Juilliard and she hated it.
I believe it.
So now whenever I think about Juilliard, I think about that. Juilliard, fuck you. You were mean to Gillian Jacobs.
Well, this scene goes pretty poorly. Probably one of my least favorite scenes in the movie, to be honest.
Yeah.
In the scene where she's guest lecturing, Tarr challenges a student for not taking interest in composers that are in this demographic of what is known as, like, the Western canon, right? So it's old white men who have had some sort of lasting artistic impact. So for her, this is really about Bach. Like, she's obsessed with Bach, and she is like, why did none of you students get it? And specifically, the student that she's challenging identifies herself as BIPOC and as pangender, and then says essentially that they don't see the value in spending their time learning about old white men. In what is a very chilling scene, Tarr continues to really deride the student for their choice to not engage with old white conductors. She gives a lot of very subtle and very sharp digs, and the entire time the student is just physically shaking. Eventually, they grab their bag and run out of the class saying, "You're a fucking bitch." And she just responds with, "And you are a robot." And from my understanding, it's kind of like, take the scene as like you could side with either, right? The student could be the one who's right. The student is clearly the one that does not have power in this moment. But at the end of the day, like, are you supposed to take what Tar's saying very seriously? Like, that there is a lot of merit to be gained from learning about old white male conductors. I don't necessarily think that the director takes a firm side on either person in the scene.
No.
And that is what makes it hard to watch, especially when she is clearly using her power just to put down the student who is there to learn, right?
Yeah. And, you know, they say like, "Oh, I'm pangender." And then Tar is like, "Well, I'm a lesbian."
Yeah. Oh, my God. One of my least favorite responses and arguments to completely dismiss someone's opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
I also really felt like the student saying, "Well, I identify as BIPOC and pangender." I felt like that was played as a joke by the director, to be quite honest.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you.
Where it was like, isn't this so crazy that someone would say this? Like, let's throw in some buzzwords.
I know. Yeah, I so this is obviously, it's not a real person. It is somebody who the director has created as like a literal straw man. That character didn't really talk like I felt like a person would.
Yeah. With so much of the movie being about online cancellation, I feel like that was just supposed to be like, this is what people online actually talk like in schools these days.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Like, they do not.
So, yeah. Anyway, let's get back on track. We can come back to talk more about that later as it comes up. But that is a particularly difficult scene, in my opinion. After this, Tar and her assistant Francesca fly back to Berlin, where she spends some time with her wife and her daughter. Including some time gaslighting her wife after she has stolen her prescription drugs.
Yep.
When her wife has been suffering in like severe chronic pain at home. And she's just like, "Oh, I found a loose pill in the drawer." Definitely wasn't that she had been stealing and eating them on the plane.
Yep.
Crunching them up, man.
Yum, yum, yum.
While she's back in Berlin, she also completely chews out one of her daughter's bullies at school.
That is amazing.
Which is like, oh my God, in German too. Which I watched unsubtitled and I was like, oh my God, what could she possibly be saying? But she's just saying like, "I will get you. I will kill you."
Actually, literally.
Yeah.
It's implied that her daughter is being made fun of because she has two moms. Mm-hmm. Because when Tar shows up, she's like, "I'm Petra's father. And I'm gonna kick your fucking ass. And if you tell anybody, like an adult, they're not gonna believe you because I'm an important person and you're a fucking 13-year-old or whatever."
I would argue that they're probably like 8 or 9.
Yeah, it's a little kid.
Yes. It's like, oh my God. Anyway, as, you know, she's back in Berlin, we learn through these like subtle hints over the course of the film that a former pupil of Linda Tarr's, who's named Krista, had what was perhaps a transactional relationship with her, where sexual favors were exchanged for professional advancement in the composing and conducting industry. And we also learn that Tar and Krista are no longer on positive terms. And we can suspect also that the same thing is happening with Tar's assistant Francesca right now. Mm-hmm. And also that Tar has met a young Russian celloist named Olga, who she's currently into and who is likely on the same path, right? Where sexual favors are being exchanged for professional advancement.
Or at least that's what she wants to happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
The scene where Olga's introduced I thought was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Because Tar is in the bathroom and she sees an attractive young woman come into the bathroom and she's like, "Wow, look at that hottie." And then
what is it?
A wooga.
A wooga.
Ooga booga.
Ooga booga. Just like Linda Tarwana said, ooga booga.
That's what she said. Yeah, and so she specifically checks out what kind of shoes the woman is wearing. And it's like, why did she do that? And then when you see her and she's with her colleagues and they're auditioning everybody, she specifically looks for the same type of shoes that that woman was wearing and then marks up her like critique of that person and so that they get into the orchestra so that then she can start like grooming them, basically.
Yeah.
And I thought that was especially interesting because I think this is like a widely known fact, but if you don't know, blind auditions were implemented because so many more male musicians were being put into orchestras.
Yeah.
But even once they started doing that, still more male people were being selected. And they were like, I wonder why this is. And then when they added carpet to the flooring so that people couldn't hear people's heels clacking on the floor before they started playing, then it became a more even ratio of women to men being hired for orchestras, which is just so wild.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Oof. Anyway, Tar is on the mission to get as many hot single girlies into the orchestra as she possibly can.
To be fair, Olga is a wooga.
Sorry. Yeah, she's cute.
I'm so sorry. She's really cute.
We also get all these scenes where she's like eating, like a dude at a sports bar eating his chicken wings.
Oh my
like,
God, it was amazing.
Sauce all over her face, like talking while she eats. It's like, oh my God, girl. And it's so funny too, because that's like one of the scenes where like you can see that Linda's like losing a little bit of interest, you know?
Right.
Because she's not as like high class as she expected.
Yeah, I thought that Linda was trying to figure out whether or not she was interested in women.
Yes.
Was the other thing I thought she was doing.
Yes, that is a lot of it as well. Okay, anyway, there's Francesca, her assistant. There's Olga, the celloist. There's Krista, who she's no longer on terms with. Francesca reveals that Krista sent her, Francesca, did not send these to Linda, but sent them to Linda's assistant. Some very concerning emails. And after those concerning emails, Krista then killed herself. And Tar orders Francesca to delete the emails. And she also seeks a lawyer because she learns that Krista's parents plan to sue her because Tar provided very, very, very poor recommendations when she was searching for a job, which essentially blacklisted her from advancing at all in the conducting industry and was forcing her to change fields. So while all of this stuff is going on with Krista's family, Tar begins working more closely with Olga, at one point even chasing her through this dilapidated apartment where she presumably lives. And Linda, she gets chased by a dog until she falls on her face and like seriously hurts herself.
Yep.
And then she tells everyone that she was attacked on the street.
Yeah.
By someone who didn't like her. And I think that this was like supposed to be a bit about quote unquote playing the victim when you are an abusive or powerful person.
Yeah.
Who's going to be facing any sort of criticism for your actions and for misuses of power. Where it's like, if she's so ready to just be like, well, I was attacked.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh. Girl, you were doing this yourself, right?
You just fell on your face.
Yeah, exactly. You literally just fell on your face. After this, both Linda's wife and Francesca start to be very suspicious of Olga. And there's one distraction to that suspicion, though, which is that Tar is planning to advance Francesca up to be the orchestra manager. But to do that, she has to actually fire the current manager. And when she goes to do this, he reacts by claiming that everyone in the orchestra knows that she's up to something. He implies that they know that she's trading sexual favors for career advancement, and he knows that Francesca is about to become his replacement. So Tar gets very freaked out about the consequences if anyone found out that that's what she was doing. So instead of Francesca, she decides to promote a different person into the role after she fires him. And that leads Francesca to instantly quit, destroy Tar's entire work schedule, and blackmail her.
Yes.
Which is fair. So
she has a little girl boss moment.
Yeah, she does. Way to go, Francesca. I should also note that Francesca is played by Noemi Merlant, who is one of the leads in Portrait of a Girl on Fire, Portrait of a Woman on Fire. She's the painter.
Damn, right. Yeah. All these people, it's like a lesbian movie reunion.
I know, especially with Tar being played by Cate Blanchett, who,
yeah.
To my knowledge, is not queer, but did play Carol in the movie Carol.
Cate Blanchett doing such a fucking good job.
Cate Blanchett in, I just Googled this, in 2015 on the Guardian article titled, Cate Blanchett, I've never had a sexual relationship with a woman.
Boof. I hope she followed that up with, but I hope I do someday.
She said, from memory, the conversation ran, have you had relationships with women? And I said, yes, many times. Do you mean, have I had sexual relationships with women? Then the answer is no. She continued, but in 2015, the point should be, who cares? Call me old-fashioned, but I thought one's job as an actor was not to present one's boring, small, microscopic universe, but to make a psychological connection to another character's experiences. My own life is of no interest to anyone else. Or maybe it is, but I certainly have no interest in putting my thoughts and opinions out there.
Okay.
She said about Carol, Carol's sexuality is a private affair. What often happens these days is if you are homosexual, you have to talk about it constantly.
Oh, the only thing
before your work. We're living in a deeply conservative time.
Oh, that's true, though. Actually, people don't have to talk about it. People choose to talk about it. People don't want to hear about it, which is why we need to talk about it.
I think that maybe what she was trying to get at is like, that's the only thing people ask you questions about.
Oh, that's fair.
If my interpretation of that is correct, then I think that that's fair. Anyway, so Francesca has quit. She's destroyed Tara's schedule. She's blackmailed her. And meanwhile, Tara has gone viral online. An edited video of her Juilliard lecture has gone completely viral. And all of her words have been edited out of context. And it makes her seem like even more of a jerk than she actually was. Which she really was being a huge jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But this edit is like, I can't even remember exactly what it was. But it's like her saying like, black people are bad. Like, it's like really, really bad. Like,
it was like a really bad edit, and I think that was kind of intentional. Yes. But it was like one step down from somebody editing her being like, black people are bad, I hate them.
Like, it's horrible.
Like, it's really, really out of context.
Whereas like what she actually said was just like, who cares about composers from the modern era? Like, where it's like, oh my god, girl. Like, no matter what she was saying, it was bad, but then they edited it to make it seem even worse. Whatever,
it's shown to her, but like her colleagues are like, we don't care about this. Like, we care about the fact that actually we think that you've been grooming a bunch of people.
And at the same time that that goes viral, the New York Post publishes an article with accusations of her predatory behavior. So conveniently, she also has to go to New York for depositions for the case that Chris's family has brought against her for her suicide.
And she disguises it as a press tour.
She does. And she brings Olga with her, telling her wife that because her back hurts so much from all of her stress and her being attacked in the streets.
Yeah.
Because she's in so much pain. She just needed someone to carry her bags. But everyone knows that that's not why she brought Olga with her.
Including Olga.
Including Olga. And Olga's cold the entire trip and flirts with different boys that she meets. And also there's a crowd following Tar that have signs that say like hashtag justice for Krista. And she's being chased on the streets and they're like, oh my god, there's another one, like pointing at Olga.
Yeah.
Like, she's like grooming another person. Yeah. And videos of her with Olga with the protesters are posted online. And then after this whole trip, after the depositions and everything, and after she meets with the New York Post, she returns to Berlin with Olga. So this is kind of a tangent, but intermittent throughout this entire movie, Tar has become jumpier and jumpier over time as she's like worried about when the news about her horrible acts are going to break, right?
Mm-hmm.
So weird things have been happening around her house that have also been setting this off, like metronomes turning on in the middle of the night or the fridge making a weird noise. And it seems like all of these small little noises are really getting to her. And one recurrent thing is that while she's working in her office, struggling to focus on writing her new composition, she continuously hears this beeping from medical devices from her neighbor who is caring for her dying elderly mother. And one day her mother falls off the toilet and she runs next door to ask Tar for help. And when Tar enters, she finds the woman is bruised, dirty, naked on the floor. And after she helps her get her back up in her chair, she runs back to her office, completely strips, washes her entire body with hand soap in the sink, like that she can't believe that she got so dirty. And then later on, the woman actually passes away and new neighbors come and knock on Tar's office door. So the new neighbor, this woman, tells Tar that that was actually her mother that died, and they've taken her younger sister to an asylum, the one who is caring for the mom. Mm-hmm. And now they're selling the unit, and they want Tar to be quiet during showings or to tell them her schedule so that they can schedule showings when she's not playing music, because they think that her music would annoy potential buyers.
Yeah, and it's so funny because when they come and they're like, can we schedule around when you're here, she was like, oh, because my music's so good, you're welcome to hear it, like that would be a major plus. They're like, no, we think that people wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
And that pisses her off.
Which is fair. That ends up being her literal Joker moment, because the next scene we see is her terrorizing them during showings, where she's very loudly, very poorly playing the accordion and like screaming, you put your sister in prison, you killed your mom.
Yeah.
Oh my god. She completely breaks. That's her moment.
Iconic.
While all of that stuff is going on with Olga and with the press and with the Christmas case. So anyway, because of the videos and the allegations in the news and all the press around her, Tar is actually fired as the conductor of the Berlin Philharmonic. And additionally, her wife ends their relationship and takes their daughter away and kicks her out of their home. Tar becomes more and more deranged until one day she actually bursts on stage during a live performance of the Philharmonic Orchestra, and she physically attacks her replacement, attempting to regain control of the orchestra again and just like continue conducting as if nothing ever happened, as if she didn't just like attack this man.
And this guy who replaced her, they have a scene at the beginning of the movie where he's like begging her. He's like, please, I want to know why you're so good at conducting. Please give me your notes so that I can know your secrets. I want to be just like you. And she's like, you'll get a much farther if you just like do your own thing. And he's like, no, I want to do what you're doing. And
and then he ends up doing what she's doing.
And then he ends up doing what she's doing, and she gets to punch him in the face.
Yep.
This was also like it was Symphony 5 or something in a series of symphonies that she had been conducting. So this would have been like the final one.
Yes. So after she attacks this man, basically the advice is like, you gotta lay low. Dude, like, you could get arrested. Like, please go lay low. So she sneaks away and visits her childhood home, I believe in New Jersey or New York.
Yeah, I think it's upstate New York.
And her family still lives there. But when she enters the house, absolutely nothing has changed since the 70s. Her family was very working class, and they don't understand her at all. It's revealed that her birth name was actually Linda Tar, spelled very differently. Like, the way that she goes by now is like LYNDATA with a little dash over it, R, right? But it was just, you know, a more standard spelling of Linda Tar, right?
Yeah.
More Americanized. And she had changed her name to seem like she was more sophisticated and to create some distance from her family, right? So her brother comes home and finds her in the house and basically tells her, like, you completely forgot your roots. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you came back? Like, kind of like, who cares? You're basically not a member of this family anymore.
Right.
Anyway, after visiting her childhood home, she travels to the Philippines. Again, she's laying low, and there are much fewer people there that are familiar with her association and her current situation and all of the allegations. So she begins taking these random conducting jobs without much press or fanfare to them and starts living something of like a normal life, you could call it. To her regret, like, she really, it's clear that she's very unhappy. And one day she actually asks her hotel's concierge for massage recommendations, and he misunderstands her and sends her to a brothel. And when she's asked to choose an escort, one girl makes direct and unrelenting eye contact with her. And this girl is number 5, which coincidentally was both Olga's position in the orchestra and also was the number of the symphony that she had been stuck on composing, like we said.
Yeah.
So that is like incredibly upsetting to her. So she runs outside and just immediately vomits on the street. We then see her coordinating one like big show. And on the show night, she walks out from behind the curtain and steps onto the stand, and then begins the live orchestral performance of the soundtrack for the hit video game Monster Hunter. And the entire crowd is just full of Monster Hunter cosplayers.
Which is incredible. All really good cosplayers as well.
Yeah. Also, can I just note, like, as funny as I thought this was, I am a casual Monster Hunter fan. I enjoy Monster Hunter. This was like, oh my god, are you fucking for real when this happened? But also, like, there's a lot of intentional irony or satire in choosing the Monster Hunter video game franchise for a film about the Me Too movement and cancel culture and about quote-unquote being the monster that is hunted.
Oh, I guess so, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that, like, the studio that made Monster Hunter had, like, a Blizzard fucking moment or something.
Oh my god, no, not to my knowledge.
Okay. Oh my god, can you imagine if she was performing the Overwatch fucking scene? They would have never given them the rights to do that.
That would have been so funny, though.
That would have been even funnier, in a very dark way, to be clear.
Monster Hunter, to my knowledge, no big negative associations, but yeah, just the idea of it being a film about cancel culture, about it being like she's getting slowly hunted and taken down from every direction by all of these people who have these allegations against her, right?
Yeah, but she's so good at conducting, guys.
Yeah, that is another point where it's like, as part of the messaging is like, isn't it a shame that we've lost this incredible talented conductor and now she's stuck conducting the Monster Hunter like orchestra, when like for so many people that would be their total ultimate dream, right? Would yeah. be to conduct the Monster Hunter orchestra.
Be like,
oh my god. Exactly. Yeah. And then also, I mean, there were so many critiques about this ending too being very racist in the like in this depiction that the Filipino people wouldn't be able to understand all the allegations against her.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where it's like she wouldn't face cancellation because people in this country just don't get it. Whereas like that wouldn't be the case. She would still probably really suffer finding a job because anybody could Google her and see all of this shit instantly.
Also, too, there was like an implication that they just like didn't even understand who she was. They just understood that she was like kind of famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's like the scene where she's like introducing herself for the position and they just like give her a gift basket and they're like, these two people will show you around. And she's like, oh, can't I see the composition so I can start working because I'm just so good at my job? And they're like, no, have fun.
And then she's like clearly not having fun at all because she's like, oh, I hate it here. It's like so dirty and gross.
Yeah.
Which is also just sucks. Yeah. To a degree, the film is written in a way where it's like you can take whatever understanding you want out of it. You can think that Tar was wronged, or you can think that Tar was a horrible person, which really that is ultimately what the film lays out, is that like she's done all of these like completely egregious acts that have led her to end up where she is. And that's just a natural consequence.
Right. And before we talk about the director and his feelings on the movie, I do want to like go on about my initial reaction after I finished the movie. Yeah, because it had just so happened that right before I watched the movie, Louis C.K. had just sold out Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And so for me, like having that happen and then watching this movie, my initial reaction was that it's very interesting that Tar in this film is a woman and a lesbian, because I guess I was giving it the benefit of the doubt and being like, oh, this is like a response to the Me Too movement and like cancellation, quote unquote, and being like, you're only going to face consequences if you are like a woman or a lesbian.
And then the consequences even then are not completely detrimental to your survival. Like you can still survive and live a life. It just might not be the exact life that you were living before.
Exactly. Because even before she goes to the Philippines, like she has a team of people who are like, we're going to rebuild your reputation. Like we're going to create a new story and a new narrative. We just need you to like get out of the limelight
for a little while. Yeah. And that's where we end off, right? We don't get to see what happens after she's done laying low, which is likely that she goes right back to normal, you know?
Yeah. Also in like Googling Louis C.K. just like very, very briefly right before the podcast, I found a quote from Roseanne Barr.
God.
Who just did an interview saying that Hollywood has a double standard and that she is the only person who lost everything.
That's not true, but she is right. It, just in, yeah. in the way that you framed it, where it's like people who have identities that are in any way marginalized or deviant from the straight, white, able-bodied, cisgender male norm, right? Ultimately will face more consequences for the exact same behavior.
Yeah.
And that also, something that both Cate Blanchett and Todd Field, the director, have said repeatedly is like, power is genderless. It transcends gender. Like, it doesn't matter. To a degree, you're right that like someone can misuse power no matter what their identity is. Obviously, yeah. someone can misuse the power that they have no matter what their identity is. But that doesn't mean that the consequences for that misuse of power aren't different.
Yeah. And to quote the Joker, we live in a society.
You can't watch this movie and tell me that it's not the female version of the Joaquin Phoenix Joker. I understand that, like, literally the difference, too, is that, like, Linda Tarr is, like, this, like, massively wealthy, famous person. And the Joker is, like, going through the world's most horrible traumas left and right in his life. But also the ultimate takeaway being like, it's okay, go crazy, go ape shit, you'll be fine. It's like, oh my God, y'all. I'm very mid on the Joker. I think the Joker is, and I think that Tar is an interesting film. But as I said to you, Aaron, before we recorded, I'm just kind of bored by films that won't take a stance on what is right or wrong at this point in my life.
That's fair.
Maybe I'll come back around to being interested in them again. But for right now, I'm personally just a little bit like, take a stance. You think it's so bold to not have an opinion when really it is a lot more bold actually to have an opinion and to make it seen and obvious in film.
I agree. I think especially right now, and I think I would feel a little bit differently if, like, the director, instead of, because his stance on the movie is like, I just wanted to start a conversation. Like,
I hate that.
No opinions. Yeah, I do. I think I hate that more than the film not taking a stance itself, because I think that it's actually kind of more interesting to, like, lay this out as it is and then be like, and actually, she didn't face any consequences and she still can live a life even though she's done really horrible things.
Yeah.
But to be like, oh, I don't know, what's the meaning? What do you think? I think it's a little bit silly.
Yeah. Agreed.
I actually wanted to go back and talk about Francesca a little bit.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
So before the movie opens with the interview, there's a scene that's actually from later in the movie where it's somebody texting somebody else and they're looking at Linda Tarr and she's like totally drunk, passed out on an airplane. And they're like, oh, I guess she does feel guilty over all the terrible things that she's done. And the person who they're texting is like kind of concerned. And they're like, do you still love her? And they're like, yeah, I do. And initially I had thought like, oh, who was that? And then I was like, I don't know. And then I was like, oh, it must have been Lydia's wife. But then actually, no, I think it was Francesca yes. messaging Olga, and that she had been in cahoots with Olga for a very long time and had
yes.
let Olga know that she was going to potentially be like a target.
Yeah. And it's Olga is the one filming and messaging and asking, do you still love her? And Francesca's like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is another more subtle part to the movie, right? Where it's not that necessarily that these women are conspiring to take her down, but it's that right. they're commiserating over a similar experience of being basically forced
yeah.
into advancing their careers by developing relationships with Tar.
Yeah, and I mean, before Lydia snubs Francesca for the position that she had been, like, setting her up for, there's a moment where she, like, confronts Francesca about the fact that she has not deleted the emails from Krista, like, that basically implicate her and their, like, relationship. And Francesca will not delete the emails and pretend that that never happened because yeah. Krista was also somebody who's really important to her. And that's another reason why she gets snubbed for the position. And then that's when she, like, is the one to release all this information to the public. I think that if she had, like, deleted all the emails, that Lydia would have gone ahead and given her the position and just, like, been like, consequences be damned. they don't got no proof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a very interesting thing because, I mean, obviously you can have a relationship and care very deeply about somebody who's horrible to you.
Yes.
And I also thought the contrast of that with Lydia's wife, who actually kind of sees their relationship as like mostly transactional and isn't really actually in love with her anymore.
Yeah. Well, another point too is that her wife is like the first chair.
Yeah.
And there's so much speculation that she's only in that position because she's married to the conductor. Which, yeah. Actually, are you ready to start talking about Maren Alsop?
Yes.
So I might be mispronouncing her name. If so, very, very sorry. But Maren Alsop is a real life conductor, real human person, and is a lesbian. And Tar, the film, is fictional. But the plot of the film and Tar as a character bears kind of the striking resemblance to Maren Alsop, who is also name dropped and recognized in the movie.
Yeah.
During the interview scene at the start of the film.
Right. Which I don't know how she feels about this, but fictional Tar is like, oh, yes. I don't experience sexism. There's Maren Alsop. And I'm like, how does she feel about that?
Exactly. So Alsop is the chief conductor of the Vienna Radio Symphony Orchestra. She's also the music director laureate of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. And like I said, she's openly a lesbian. Prior to moving to Baltimore to start conducting the orchestra there, she conducted the Colorado Symphony Orchestra for many years. And she was embroiled in a serious controversy when it was revealed that she was in a relationship with one of the high-placed orchestra members. And people were like, this person only got this position in the orchestra because she's in a relationship with the conductor. But Alsop has said that her relationship with this woman started well before her appointment, and it did not at all affect how she performed in her job. Like, she was hired on after she had already been together with her. So didn't necessarily indicate any advancement.
Right.
She was also involved in a second controversy in 2005 after she accepted the role in Baltimore. Members of the orchestra in Baltimore reacted against her and claimed that she wasn't going to be a good enough conductor to lead them. And that's presumably based on her performance as a guest conductor a few times prior to her appointment in the role. And the orchestra members actually wrote to the board and called for her removal as the conductor.
Oh my God.
At that time, she was quoted as saying, quote, "Listen, being music director is not a popularity contest. It's nice to be beloved, but it's highly unusual. My main goal is to make music," unquote. As you might predict, she has seen Tar, and she did not like it. She was quoted publicly in the Sunday Times saying, quote, "I was offended. I was offended as a woman. I was offended as a conductor. I was offended as a lesbian. To have an opportunity to portray a woman in this role and to make her an abuser, for me, that was heartbreaking."
Yeah.
Unquote.
Totally.
Which is fair because so much of this like aligns with her direct personal experience. She's name dropped in the movie.
Yeah.
And she herself has, to my knowledge, no abuse allegations against her.
Right. Yeah.
Other than the theoretical allegation that she had advanced someone in the Colorado Orchestra.
Right.
That she was in a relationship with prior to taking on the role.
Yeah. Which, not a great look to
not a great look.
Date somebody who's like under you. That so this seems like it was where Kate Blanchett responded.
Yeah, so Kate Blanchett responded directly to Alsop's statement that she found the movie offensive. And Kate Blanchett said on BBC Radio, "The movie is, quote, a meditation on power, and power is genderless." Which, obviously, like I said earlier, that statement is reductive. It negates so much about the fact that so much of the movie is about respectability, right? And fitting into power. And when I say respectability, I mean Tar, so much of her character is about fitting the needs, wishes, desires, and whims of her predecessors in the composing industry, which are old straight white men. And she is making every single step she can to fit in with them.
Yes. Yeah.
So setting aside things that are relevant to her identity, setting aside experiences that she might have that would relate to sexism, completely forgoing all of that so that she can, quote unquote, like become something great. Right? That's like so much of what her character is about, is becoming someone that's like so great and so above everything. And to do that, she feels like she has to align with composers in the Western canon because they have transcended time and space to become something great. And I mean, one of the things that she says to the student at the Juilliard guest lecture is like, do you want to be remembered because of your identity or do you want to be remembered because you've made great work?
Yeah.
And that's like so much of what her character is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think saying that the movie is about respectability and like a lot of Lydia's motivation is surrounded by respectability is just so true. Because there's like her mentor, she specifically will hire a car for him to bring him like back and forth from their lunches and has told him that it's actually the orchestra that's paying for it when it's her. Because she's like, oh, I want him to think that the orchestra still cares about him.
Yeah.
As well, too, with her respectability, towards the end of the movie, like, she, quote unquote, like, slips up so much, like, with her brashness of bringing Olga along on her trip to New York and just, like, really not hiding the fact, actually, or covering her tracks at all with her abuse. And to me, that really spoke to her comfort with her position and how she thought that all this respectability that she had built up would protect her and that she could be that brazen and brash with her actions without facing any consequences, partially because she had for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Really interesting character study.
Really interesting character study.
And crazy good cinematography as well. Like, really amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of really long shots. So cool. So beautiful.
Yeah, very, very beautiful film. Some of the ways that they advance the plot in, like, unexpected ways too. Like, or kind of expected, but unexpected. Like, one of my favorite scenes in this movie is when it's the moment before she attacks the replacement conductor, where you see her behind the curtain, and there's a shot of her getting ready, of her, like, putting on her gloves and her suit and making sure she's perfectly poised and ready to go out. And then she just, like, sprints out on the stage and attacks this man.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, my God. Like, for a moment, you think, right, that it's like, oh, she's actually not faced the consequences of this. They've brought her back into her role.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh no, she's like forcing her way back in.
Yeah.
Which too, I guess, speaks to the continued prominence of people after they have been involved in like hashtag Me Too scandals when they've been outed as abusers or as rapists, right? Where it's like they're fighting to maintain relevance.
Yeah.
After this. Most people, after they have these allegations against them, after it's been revealed that they have sexually abused someone or misused their power, it is like an immediate, like, I'm not going to live in the shadows and disappear off the face of the earth.
Oh, yeah.
Like they depict in this movie, it's like, I'm going to lay low for like a couple months and then I'll be right back to where I was before.
Yeah.
I read this article in the Houston Chronicle that was written by A.A. Dowd, where they said this quote, and it kind of resonated with me, so I took it down, so I'll just read it here. They said, and I quote, "The real terror of hashtag MeToo for dinosaurs used to taking whatever and whoever they wanted as the spoils of their supposed genius is the fear that the world has fundamentally changed to reject this unspoken agreement." And then they went on to say, "Lydia has mastered the transactional politics of her field and rose to the top of a discipline by playing the time-honored rules of the men that have traditionally dominated it. The trajectory of the plot is a realization that she has achieved equality of accountability too. Being a woman will not shelter her from the consequences of her own abuses of power." And that is so obvious, in my opinion, like when she sits down to talk with her mentor in all of those meetings that you just said, where it's like she is realizing that he's behind on the times, that she thinks that she's better than him, that she's more advanced, that she can see things in a different and new light. But then like immediately after the classroom scene, she puts down someone that could theoretically be in the same position that she's in.
Yeah.
And she's like on the very tip of realizing her actions, but she never gets there in the entire course of the film. She never gets to that realization.
Yeah.
Or you can make the argument that she gets there and she decides that she doesn't care, that she's not willing to actually make any changes because of the respectability angle. I'm just thinking about how so much of this movie is about sexual abuse too, and the motivations of someone who commits or perpetrates sexual abuse, which are oftentimes it's all about power, but it's also about power in like a somewhat inscrutable way.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting to see it play out with Olga, because there was a moment where, like, again, Olga is like chomping down on her like
turkey leg
steak sandwich. Yeah, her turkey leg.
That's what it feels like. I don't know what it was that she ordered, but it feels like she's at the Ren Faire eating a giant turkey leg.
Yes.
Like there's no way to make it look like what she's eating is clean. And like...
ahead of this, Lydia's like, oh, this place has a delicious cucumber salad. And Olga's like, that's nice. I want the turkey leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Olga is such a free spirit and is, I don't know, I just kind of always does her own thing.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that that was going to turn off Lydia and that she would be interested in somebody who she could like totally control.
Yeah.
Because that just kind of seemed like her MO up until that point. But then she really does seem intrigued and interested in Olga, who is wise to her games.
Yeah.
And is not engaging.
I think it's less too that she's like seriously interested in Olga as a person, obviously, but more that she's interested in the idea of just having power over her. And I think that that's just more transparent.
Yes.
That's the case for all of the women, right? But it's the most transparent with Olga because there's more of a difference in personality and dynamic between the two. Like with Francesca,
yeah,
she seems to be a very poised, polished, put together, professional classical musician, versus Olga is a little bit more of like that new school, right? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, we are also seeing the beginning of Tar and Olga's relationship, where Francesca and Lydia have been playing this game for a while.
Yes.
At this point, and Francesca has already been subjected to the whims.
Yes.
Of Lydia.
So who knows, maybe Francesca was just the same as Olga when they first met.
Yeah, totally. Or Krista.
Yes, yeah. We never get to know what exactly happened with Krista. One interesting thing, too, is that this movie follows, like, the classical film trope of putting the credits at the start rather than the end.
Yeah.
Which, if you pay close attention to the credits at the start, you'd see that Monster Hunter was credited. I should have mentioned this at the top, but this film was recommended to us by June, Samantha, and Taya.
Yeah.
And I chatted a little bit with Samantha and June a couple weekends ago about the movie, right after I watched it. And Sammy basically said, like, when I saw Monster Hunter in the credits, I was like, what could that possibly be? And then I got so distracted by the movie that I completely forgot about Monster Hunter until the very end. And then it was oh my God, Monster Hunter.
I love that.
I have like one final thought, which is just more about the ambiguity of the ethics of the movie, because one thing that I thought and one thing that I immediately saw is like, this would be someone's, maybe not devil's advocate argument, but like this could be someone's argument and take, is like,
yeah,
so regarding Tar and Olga's relationship, when Tar takes Olga to New York and also when they get dinner, I think that there is a clear argument that Olga has never been into Tar, right?
Yeah.
And so Tar's plan to start a relationship with her probably never would have worked, right? So they go to New York, and then there's a scene where Tar's like, you want to go get dinner? Like, with the implication, you know, dinner, back to the hotel room, sex, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And Olga's just like, no, I'm good, bye. And goes back to her own hotel room and, like, leaves Tar completely alone.
Yeah, she's like, I'm, like, totally dead because of the jet lag. I'm going to turn in. And Tar's like, oh, okay, me too. And then later, Tar goes down to the lobby to get a bottle of water, and she sees Olga all dressed up, ready to hit the town.
Yep. Right. So there's this idea that her plan to get with Olga never would have worked. But then ultimately, her being spotted with Olga is what gets her, quote unquote, canceled. Truly, right? Because it's like, here's another reason, like, there's yet another woman who we have like some allegations about. But then that kind of leaves the space for an audience member. And again, that this is not like a credit to the director. I think the director was intentionally being very ambiguous with this entire movie. But there's this ability to take away this argument of like, did she really do anything wrong if she just intended to do it and it didn't actually happen? Right? Which is just like another thing where it's like, take a stance, my dude. Say
right.
Your opinion. I think it's very, very easy to walk away from this movie being like, Lydia Tarr is a horrible person. And it's also just as easy to be like, oh, she was so wronged. And yeah, that's my final thought. It's just that you can go either way. But I think my interpretation is always going to be that like, she's not in the right here.
Of course. And obviously, because there's literally so much evidence with Krista that it does take down her prestige for at least a moment. Yes. But yeah, I think if anything, because, and this kind of relates back to the scene at Juilliard where they're talking about Bach, where Tar's like, oh yeah, he might not have been a great person, but like his music's so amazing. I think if anything, yes, to me, the devil's advocate argument for Tar is just like, well, she might have like done all these like horrible things to other people, but she's such a good conductor.
Yep.
Which is like what happens
all the time
with every person who gets canceled. It seems like quote unquote canceled, to be clear.
Just to circle back to Louis C.K., that's like, yeah, one of the most common arguments where it's like, he might have sexually abused all of these women, but also he's so funny and so much of his comedy has to do with like tropes about sexism and like injustice. Yeah. And it's like, who cares?
Who cares?
It's interesting, I guess, to see this movie as like a, you know, anybody can abuse their power messaging.
Yeah. Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Maybe this is the first time that many people are being exposed to that idea, that anybody can misuse their power. And if that was your experience, great. I'm glad that you learned and took something away from it.
And the only other thing I have to say about this, which I think was potentially missed just by the director being a man,
yeah,
is I thought it was an interesting reflection of how queer people are often more scrutinized for things that they do, yeah, especially online. And I think small creators as well, because it is so intimate and they're just like, they're so much closer than somebody who is like Hollywood famous, yeah, or something, that oftentimes they can get a lot of unhelpful hate.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. And I think this is going to be my very final thought, but I remember watching that clip in the movie, or that scene in the movie where the Tar first finds the viral video on Twitter. It's like, oh, it has like 30 likes.
Yeah.
It's viral.
Yeah. Actually, that was the only part of the movie that I actually thought was like really good.
Yeah.
Because it was like this very obvious shitty edit and it wasn't getting any traction, but of course it was shown to Tar and she was like, this invalidates all the other stuff people are saying because it's so obviously edited. And everybody else was like, we don't care about that. We care about the fucking emails and how you like totally boxed out this person, yeah, to the point where it like ruined her life.
Yeah. But another thing too that highlighted for me is like, as a conductor, you really would have a very small following, right, of people who actually care, yeah, what it is that you're getting up to. So in these like smaller communities, it doesn't take a lot of people to make a difference and call someone out for their shitty behavior, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. That's actually a really interesting interpretation of this. Yeah, because I didn't see it like that at all.
Yeah, that was something that I was thinking where it was like, oh, like she is facing consequences for like, honestly, what is a small vocal group?
I was seeing it as she's trying to use a small vocal group to invalidate the actual criticism that she's being faced with.
Yeah, that's true too. Either way, you can read it either way.
This movie is starting a conversation.
Yeah, and that's fine too, because it's like, do I want every single movie to completely hand an idea to me? No. I want to be able to pick it in and like think about it.
And that's not what you're saying, yeah, either.
But like also, again, you can make a firm point without being completely agnostic.
Yeah. And it's just, having sat on this movie for a little while, I have a hard time believing that he was like, this movie is agnostic in its opinion.
I just don't know which side he is on, though. I don't know if he's, oh. I feel like I can't tell.
That's fair.
If you have an opinion, I would love it if you would write into us and have this conversation with us, yeah, because I would love to know if you know a little bit more about directorial intent or what you think directorial intent was. Obviously, like, you can make the argument that intent doesn't matter and it's what the film is actually saying that matters. And that's fair and fine too. But I just am curious about it. You know, I'm just like wondering, yeah, what was in his head.
Yeah, we already looked at what we thought about it without the directorial intent.
Exactly. So. We've already talked through that.
Yeah, we've already talked about it. We want to know what you think.
Yeah.
Email us at Aaron@gaze.gaze or DM us on Twitter @gaze.gaze. I think that's it for thoughts.
I think that that's it too. I have fun.
Yeah.
That sounded a little hesitant. But I did have fun.
Oh, yeah. This movie's like a roller coaster because I was so enchanted by the visuals that once it ends, you're like, wow, that was so good. And then you think about it and you're like, what?
Yeah.
And then you think about it some more and you're like, okay.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that like I feel like I've known women like Lydia Tarr in my personal life.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, man.
So I hear these arguments that she makes in the classroom and I'm just like, oh, I can't watch this. I know this woman and I don't like this woman.
If you want to be enchanted for 2.5 hours, I would say watch this.
Yeah, it's interesting. It, as we said, it was like widely considered by many people to be the best movie of 2022.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting for sure. It's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Not in its messaging, just in its shots. No. But
I mean, oh my God, so many crazy good shots.
I hate their house, though. Every single time they...
When you said... When you said...
The Parasite House.
Parasite House? That's dead on. Oh my God.
It feels like the fucking Parasite House.
It is the Parasite House, basically. Oh my goodness. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you feel like it, you can follow us on Twitter at GaysGays. And that's also the best place to get information about our episodes, what's coming up. You can reply to our tweets to leave comments about whatever we're going to be talking about. And you can also slip into our DMs if you so wish.
To slip?
You can slip. I'm running with it. No sliding, only slipping.
Yes.
Alternatively, you can email us at Aaron@GaysGays to send us any thoughts, ideas, or recommendations. Or to tell us about Tarr. We would love that. Many thanks to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Nude for allowing us to use their songs Look and Love and You Pretty Thing for our intro and our outro music. You can and should buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com, but you can also stream it on Spotify. And next week, we're going to be doing Warrior Nun! I love Warrior Nun.
Oh my God, I'm glad that you love it. I still have to watch it.
It's really so good. I started watching it and I was like, this is okay. And then I kept watching it and I was like, this is so good!
You're like, this is the best thing ever.
And it got canceled by Netflix because fuck Netflix. It's so sad that it got canceled.
I'm so interested to watch it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing that over the next 2 weeks. So if any of you have thoughts, you know, reach out. You know where to find me.
Yeah. And I will say that this was made specifically for me. So I don't know how you're going to feel about it.
You love lesbian nuns with like magical powers.
Yeah.
And that's literally with like axes and weapons and shit. So like literally this is perfect for you.
I know. I just from the title alone, I was like, I'm going to love this.
Bias from upon reading the words warrior nun.
They put up like one cross and I'm like, ooh, whoa, is that Catholic imagery? My unreligious ass has no trauma associated with that and therefore just finds it cool.
Anyway, until next week, or sorry, yeah, until our next episode.
Yeah. Oops. Oh yeah, sorry about the delay. It was me. My life is falling apart.
No, we don't usually do an episode every week. So.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
We always say next week, but that's not true.
Next shmeek. Next fortnight.
I was going to next fortnight. Does my floss dance?
Oh, fuck. Anyway, it's an Aaron week.
Half month, half moon.
I like Fortnite.
Next fortnight. But why is the game called Fortnite? Wait, we can't that's a great get up.
Question. I'm believing this in. Why is the game called Fortnite? I'm Aaron.
Fortnite. Hold on. It's because they build forts and protect against monsters that invade at night.
Wait, no, they don't.
That was in the original version of the game before they introduced Battle Royale.
Oh.
So they used to have Save the World mode that was like tower defense. If any Fortnite experts out there know more would like to share more than I just learned on this single Quora response, hit us up.
Yeah.
But until then, I'm Erin.
And I'm Erin.
And we're gay. We are gay.
Bye. Thank you.